Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Lynn S., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Toronto, Canada. Today is Tuesday, September 25th, 2018, and we are reading from the Big Book in the chapter The Family Afterward on page 123, the first paragraph, Suppose We Tell You Some, through three paragraphs ending with For What He Is Trying to Get. And we will be commenting on all three paragraphs. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Kelly F., the 12 Traditions, Carol H., and readers of the text, John K. and Sherry K.B. The reference numbers for Monday, September the 24th, the 10 a.m. meeting is 11952. And Tuesday, September 25th, the 7 a.m. meeting, 11954. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose. To carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Kelly F. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning, Lynn. Can I be heard?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. This is Kelly, recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for allowing me to do service. Pass.
Thank you, Kelly F. And now Carol H. will read the 12 traditions.
Good morning. This is Carol H., recovered from Colorado, currently in the state of Maine. The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there's but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Pat.
Thank you, Carol H. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press *1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press *1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book on page 123, the first paragraph, suppose we tell you some, through three paragraphs ending with for what he is trying to get. And John K., could you start us off, please?
Sure, Lynn. My name is John Kiernan. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. Suppose we tell you some of the obstacles a family will meet. Suppose we suggest how they may be avoided, even converted to good use for others. The family of an alcoholic longs for the return of happiness and security. They remember when father was romantic, thoughtful, and successful. Today's life is measured against that of other years, and when it falls short, the family may be unhappy. Family confidence in dad is rising high. The good old days will soon be back, they think. Sometimes they demand that dad bring them back instantly. God, they believe, almost owes us this recompense on a long overdue account. But the head of the house has spent years in pulling down the structures of business, romance, friendship, health. These things are now ruined or damaged. It will take time to clear away the wreck. Though old buildings will eventually be replaced by finer ones, the new structures will take years to complete. Dad knows he's to blame, and it may take him many seasons of hard work to be restored financially, but he should not be reproached. Perhaps he will never have much money again, but the wise family will admire him for what he is trying to be rather than what he's trying to get. Well, I can tell you, I have been on both sides of this situation. I am, besides compulsive eater, a recovering alcoholic, and I've also been the child of alcoholics. And, you know, when I got sober and abstinent, I expected everybody's opinion and expectation to turn on a dime, because that's what had happened to me. I had, you know, started recovery, but, you know, I've been a lifelong compulsive eater. The beginnings of my absence were the beginnings of many years of abstinence, but how did those around me know that this wasn't just another one of those innumerable times I had started to try to control my compulsive eating, you know, in the past? And compulsive eaters don't tend to totally destroy the finances and the rebuilding it's talking about here. There is a lot of rebuilding that had to be done with my relationships with others, where in some cases relationships ended. I had friends who, when I got together after abstinence, I realized, geez, food was our main thing. We were sort of binge buddies. And now we didn't really have a lot in common anymore, and they looked at me strangely if I ordered a salad. But, you know, the main thing Phil talks about here is in the family part is that hanging in there. He'll rebuild the destruction he's wrought, you know. But here it was a matter of me, you know, hang in there with John. You know, he's going to be rebuilding relationships to show you he's not some arrogant, self-centered a-hole like he had been. And, you know, I think the key to that coming about was for them to see it, them to see action, to see a continual change, not just for a while. That's what it got to happen. But it didn't happen overnight. But how I lived my life, how I reacted in times of stress changed. You know, I think mainly because of some, a God consciousness had come in. I tell you that when you're no longer the center of your universe, you have a better ability to step back in times of stress or crisis and consider the situation differently and to react differently. You know, one of the things I really wanted to do was stop binging, and not just binging on food, but binging emotionally. I would sometimes really go off on people, especially when I knew I was right and they were wrong. But, you know, I don't have to do that anymore. Now, harking back to something I heard, an old-timer named Nikki told me when I first came in the program. He said, you know, when you have a disagreement with somebody, there's no need for anger or resentment. And this is because there's one of two states, either you're right or you're wrong. And if you're wrong, you have no right to be angry. And if you're right, you have no need to be angry. And, you know, that was really profound to me, you know. And that's, you know, the main change I think that came to me was I began to like myself. I began to feel secure with myself. And when you get that way, a lot of those negative defects that push people away, they fall away. I don't longer had to strive for approval and tell you how great I was, you know. And I didn't have to keep beating myself up for not being perfect and for being human. And, you know, I just all end with, I remember what Dr. Paul says in On Acceptance, you know, whenever I criticize you or me, I'm criticizing God's handiwork. I'm saying I know better than God. And that sentence includes criticizing you or me. And I need to remember I'm a work in progress. I try to let people know I'm a work in progress. And hopefully every day I get a little closer to the ideals that are in this book. Anyway, with that, I pass.
Thank you, John Kay. The line is now open for sharing on what was just read. Please say your name just once as it helps me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
Stephanie N. Gina R.
Rachel F.
Anyone else?
Mary G.
Sarah N.
Okay, that's a good lineup. Let me tell you who I have. Stephanie M., Gina R., Rachel S., Mary G., and Sarah N. Did I miss anyone? Okay, Stephanie M., could you start us off, please?
Okay, thank you. This is Stephanie N., recovered in Kansas. And these paragraphs were talking to me about, I mean, expectations of the family, but I have to remember my own expectations need to be reasonable for myself, because my self-seeking will get in the way of my relationships. If I feel like my family has a certain expectation or ideal, I will, you know, strive to meet that, and my defects will start coming up, the perfectionism, the self-seeking, and all the dishonesty that comes with that. And I can lose sight of, you know, what I'm here for, what is my higher power's purpose, because I'm so wrapped up in my family's agenda, and I lose sight of what is my higher power's agenda for me. And so that can be really dangerous. And so this is talking to the family about managing their expectations, but it reminds me to manage my own expectations, and that I have to stay grounded in the ideal that my higher power has for me, and not in the ideal that my family has for me, and not in the ideal that I had for myself of being super mom and super wife. And I had to smash that ideal and realize that I'm not ever going to be superwoman, and that's okay. I am who I am, and I have to accept that, and I have to accept my limitations. And but these paragraphs were a good reminder that I have to strive for my higher power's will, and I have to strive for balance and not for perfection. And anyways, with that, I pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stephanie N. Gina R., it's your turn, followed by Rachel S.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Lynn. This is Gina R., gratefully recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I live in Green Valley, Arizona. I'm focusing on the rebuilding. Though old buildings will eventually be replaced by finer ones, the new structures will take years to complete. And for me, how that's resonating for me today is really understanding how working through the four step, identifying those character defects, and for me, there's about a half a dozen that are very predominant, and how those operate on top of core beliefs that are basically lies in my life, and how those inform what my relationship ideal looks like with people, places, and things. And I am ecstatic to be able to say that, you know, I am finally living out mutually a relationship ideal with my husband. And this has taken over 30 years. And so, you know, I know my predominant character defects are being controlling, a superiority complex, being impatient, unkind, judgmental, and argumentative. And the way those show up when I'm interacting with him, demean him and disrespect him, and I don't have to do that anymore. Now, instead of being selfish, I can show up as a true partner, you know, understand that he has his own higher power. I can accept him for doing his how he does things. He doesn't have to do it my way. I can see his point of view. I can be content with what I have instead of trying to get more, more, more. I can try to be his friend, and we are becoming friends. We really were never, ever friends in our relationship. My honesty is growing. I can see and admit where I'm at fault, and I can say so, and I can do it sometimes pretty quickly. I can accept responsibility for my own problems. I don't have to project it onto him and make it his fault. I can accept reality and accept him as he is. My selflessness, you know, shows up as, you know, being humble and not calculating. I used to be a big manipulator, and that can also be a gift for good, being able to organize and get things done. But and then instead of being in fear, you know, I can have a posture of being assured and calm no matter what is going on around me. And for a lot of people, I know that many times will be the quote-unquote negative things, but I can tell you I was more scared of being happy and joyous. I did not know how to do that. Thank you for allowing me to share, and with that, I pass.
Thank you, Gina R. Rachel S., it's your turn, followed by Mary G.
Good morning. This is Rachel F., recovering compulsive overeater in Colorado. I just want to say I'm grateful for everyone on the line this morning and your service. So these couple passages really came at a perfect time for me, because impatience is a difficult thing. Being patient is very difficult for me, as maybe it is for a lot of you out there. And so this is just a big reminder to myself to be patient, that things will take time. You know, good things do take time and can't be rushed. It's also a reminder, although my husband is an incredibly patient man, I'm so very grateful and amazed by him. I also have to remember that those close to me, including my husband, may at times be impatient with me or some of the things that I'm dealing with, but that's okay, and that, you know, I can have compassion for them and understand that they're going through something too. They're watching the changes. They may want them to happen faster. They may be scared by them happening at all. Who knows? But that I can be, like the previous speaker said, calm and assured, and that can help others to feel calm and assured, hopefully. And so I just think this is a really nice reminder to me this morning. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel F. Mary G., it's your turn, followed by Sarah N.
Hi, this is Mary G. in Arizona. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you. This is Mary G., recovered in Mesa, Arizona, and back home after being traveling for a couple of weeks. And I'm so grateful to be on the line today. And, you know, the lines that really struck me was that it will take time to clear away the wreck, and it may take him many seasons of hard work to be restored. And, you know, for me, I'm just relating this to a sponsor-sponsee relationship that I just had to say didn't work for me. I used to have this black and white thinking that I had to help this person no matter what. Even if it wasn't working for me, I had to be there. I had to be able to fix them. And, you know, today I don't have to be right or wrong. I can simply just accept the fact that this isn't working. And, you know, it's progress for me, because I used to think that I had to help everybody. I had to fix everybody. And, you know, today I don't want to live like that. Today I want to just say that, you know, I don't have to be wrong, and I don't have to make anybody else wrong. I can just say it's not working. You know, it has to work for both of us. And, you know, I used to have to make that person wrong. If I was going to let somebody go, you know, I had to say, wow, you're just wrong. And I don't have to do that today. I can just say, you know, it, for me, it's just not working. And, you know, again, I need to constantly be on guard to look at my own character defects and say, is this being selfish? Because I get into that, you know, guilt of like, oh my gosh, is it just me? That whole brain chatter. And, you know, I just am so grateful that today I can just turn that over. And as it says in the 10th step, you know, ask God to remove those thoughts that I'm not able to have balance, or I'm not able to take care of myself, and to just let it go. You know, I can't be everything for everyone. It just doesn't work. I am not the higher power. And I'm so grateful that, you know, I know that. I'm grateful that my husband and I are back in Arizona, and just so grateful for everything everybody shared on the meeting so far. Thank you. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Mary G. Sarah N., it's your turn.
Hi, this is Sarah N., recovering compulsive overeater in California. Thank you so much for your service. Grateful to be here today. So a couple things really jumped out at me. One, the fact that it's talking to the family. So often, as we've heard, in to the wives and working with others, and now, you know, the family afterward, it just reminds me that I have not been really completely open with my recovery with my family. I'm one who's had to yet again return to live with my parents because of my disease and the effects that it's had on my life. And so although, you know, I have been living this program and working it, and I'm praying and guessing that they do see a difference, and they're super compassionate and supportive, it just reminds me that it would be, you know, a good thing to sit down with them and review this book. And my parents are both familiar with, you know, the 12-step program, and just kind of discuss, you know, my illness and my recovery. And the other thought that just popped up was just basically the third step prayer, you know, that God, I offer myself to thee, to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. So it just, again, really reminded me to just keep doing my part, stay on my side of the street, and be compassionate towards others. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Sarah N. For those of us who might have come on the line a little bit later, we are on page 123, the first paragraph, suppose we tell you some, through three paragraphs ending with, for what he is trying to get. And we're commenting on all three paragraphs. Who would like to share?
Kelly T.
Reggie O.
Julie E.B.
Sherry K.B.
Anyone else? Okay, let me tell you our lineup. Not sure about the first name. I think it was Carrie T., Reggie O., Julie E.B., and Sherry K.B. Carrie T., it's your turn.
Kelly T.
Okay.
It was Kelly T, yeah. Hi, good morning. My name is Kelly T, New York City. I'm just really grateful to be on the line and that we are around this section of the Bit Book. Because in April will be 2 years of abstinence, and my family situation, like in the beginning, I remember of my recovery. Why can my parents see that I've changed? Like, I was expecting them to change with me at the same time. And when I was listening, the reader, I was thinking, wow, for years I was in the disease, and I really screwed them up a lot emotionally, psychologically, with my the overeating, the binging, the purging, the anorexia stage. I was anorexic for a couple of years. They got to see me in really screwed up places, and then I expect them to not be afraid that I could go back to that. You know, like all these times that I told them that, oh, it's going to be different. You know, like this reminds me to be humble and to be an acceptance for who they are, and that they're slowly changing and they're finally seeing that I'm not that person anymore. And I've been doing a lot of living amends and showing my gratitude towards them. And one of the things is being patient with my mother because she's spiritually sick. So, like it says, to be compassionate and humble and patient with them, especially with my mom because she doesn't have a program. She doesn't even know English. So her trying to, you know, do the Bit Book, it's impossible with her, especially when she's not ready to do the Bit Book. And then alone in Spanish and... it's a whole other issue, but just to remember that we are all equal and that it's going to take time to repair what the damage I've made over the years with this illness, and to be grateful that I have the opportunity to make those changes, you know, God willing. And that's what I have today. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Kelly T. Reggie O., it's your turn, followed by Julie E.B.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for your service. This is Reggie O., gratefully recovered in the Los Angeles area. And, you know, I haven't had a Big Book for a week. I'm waiting on another one that I've ordered to come in, which is pretty interesting to be without that. But what stood out for me was something I had read this morning before I got up and did some writing, and it was that, and it reminds me of this, what was read today, and that is that God is my source, you know, as the recovered and continually, you know, imperfect growing person. It's really important for me not to look to the people around me and in my life to give me what I think I need from them, but to look to God as my source And that was just, I feel like my message for the day in terms of keeping my expectations at a good, you know, in a good place, because I am in a new living situation as of just over a week, and with people that I didn't know before. It's been a beautiful, you know, experience, and is being a beautiful opportunity. And I have an opportunity to grow relationships on a strong foundation where I didn't, you know, where I didn't before. And the other part of it for me is like the, I guess, perfectionism also came, is that I expect, you know, perfectionism is a big character defect, a shortcoming for me that I really need to give over and pray about, expecting perfectionism from myself or from anyone else around me. And so I think that's just what I had to say this morning. You know, yes, last night when I came home, I was reminded of how absolutely essential and important my recovery is in this space. Because as with most things, you know, when I pick up food, let the compulsion takes over. I can wreck any situation I'm in, whether it's professional or social or family or you name it. So I'm very aware this morning how absolutely important my recovery is, and that my commitment to that and someone said before the service, you know, let me be useful to others on 12th step is really, I'm really glad to be living in that with you all and having the message honed in this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Reggie O. Julie E.B., it's your turn, followed by Sherry K.B.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered one day at a time in Colorado Springs, Colorado. As I just listen to this and we have these paragraphs for us, I'm just very much reminded of the if onlys in my life, that I thought I would put down the food if only life calmed down, if only other people behaved, if only my money went better, if only I was more perfect, if only I could be acceptable. So many if onlys in my life. And then I do the same thing with my defects and in my relationships. And these would go well if only the other person did something, if only they were happy, if only I was pleasing, if only. And that's living in a constant state of unsatisfied demand. That is not living, leaning into my higher power. I mean, powerful prayer, God, I'm now willing that you have all of me, good and bad. Remove from me every defective character which stands in the way of my usefulness. And so I'm not looking for the evaluation of my family. I can't. I have to look for the evaluation of my higher power, who is so much more gentle and loving than I was with my family, or that my family can be with me. And I need to look for that guidance, that direction, asking for the next step, as the 11th step prayer says, and what it takes to get there. So if you're still suffering in the food, don't wait. Don't wait until the right circumstances present themselves. If you're still suffering in your relationships, don't wait until the right circumstances present themselves. Lean into your higher power. Pause, humbly reminding yourself you're not running the show, asking for the next right thought or action. This is a daily way of life, and there's no reason to wait to be close to my higher power and in the sunlight of the Spirit. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Julie E.B. And Sherry K.B., it's your turn.
Good morning, Lynn. Good morning, everybody. It's Sherry K.B. in Northern California. Very grateful, recovered compulsive overeater. Thanks so much for your service, Lynn, and everybody on the line, and welcome any newcomers. I'm going to just jump right in here and talk about the second paragraph where it talks about spent many years in pulling down structures of, you know, romance, I'll just say romance, friendship, and health. You know, when I used to read this before I got recovered, I used to think about my loved one who had been using, and it was all about him. And, you know, today it's all about me as far as this behavior goes, because for years, I ate at my marriage, and I had no idea that I was part of the destruction of this marriage by eating at it. I thought it was all about him. And so it did pull down structures of romance and friendship and health. And that also went for other family members of origin as well as friendships. I had no idea the damage I did by eating at everything and everybody. And so, you know, using this book, using the directions, working the steps, following the directions in this book has really changed so much of my attitude that, you know, that I can see that I've been part of the problem rather than part of the solution. And that it talks about on page 83 that there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. So, you know, yesterday I had something happen, and it just showed me how much my higher power is working in my life. Normally, the situation, I would have put my two cents in. I would have told them how to do it, what they should do, and everything. And all I did was listen, and I prayed and asked my higher power to show me what to say or to do. And I couldn't hear anything. So I know that that was my higher power telling me to you know, just listen and be quiet. And it was even commented on to me that you're not saying very much. And I just said, well, I'm just really listening to you. And what a change that is for me. And it has been periods of reconstruction and change for me. And I know that probably in the next day or so, we're going to read about something on page 124 that I always get reminded of when I'm working with others and when I did my fifth step as well, is that there are things that really, as it says up here in the first paragraph, that even converted to good use for others, is that sometimes the things that we've gone through can be a converted use for other people, that when we go through the step work, that some of the things that we've gone through and come out the other side, we can help others with as well. And I don't know, I didn't time myself, so I'll just say thank you, and I'm so grateful for my higher power. Because when I was working with my step guide, my full reliance needed to be on my higher power, and that's what I was taught, and that's what I pass on, and that's how God can help me with all of this and change for the better and work under this reconstruction and know that it's going to take time. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry KB. For those of us who may have come on the line a little bit later, we are on page 123, the first paragraph, Suppose We Tell You Some, through three paragraphs ending with, for what he is trying to get. And we're commenting on all three paragraphs. And who would like to share?
Janice P.M.
Okay, sorry. All I heard was Janice P.M. Sorry, who else was there?
Robin P.
Someone else?
Leah
P. Robin P.
Yeah, got you, Robin. Okay, let me just tell you who I have. Janice P.M., Robin P., Barbara E., and there was someone else.
I don't know, she said.
Leah.
Anybody else? Oh, Leah, I beg your pardon. I couldn't catch it. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, here's our lineup. Janice P.M., Robin P., Barbara E., and Leah TD. Janice, please go ahead for us.
Well, good morning to you, and if you would kindly just time me, please. Yeah, my name is Janice PM, and I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. Well, you know, this is a difficult thing to do. That's why they're warning us. The writers are warning us. Well, how do they know? Well, they're writing to us about their experience after they got recovered through the 12 steps. This is why it's the family after recovery. Well, recovery doesn't go away, but they after the 12 steps. Because they're warning us, but take heed. I would never take these warnings if I didn't go through the steps. Not me. It's not me. It's you. It's not me, myself, and I. Well, yeah, because you see, the expectations, like has already been mentioned, everything was about my standards. This is the way you had to be. This is the way you had to think. because if your thinking wasn't the same as mine, then, you know, then there was criticism about it. Then there was judgments about it. It's so easy. Let me tell you, I can do this in a split of the second, my disease. When I was in disease, I could tear you down so fast with my tongue. That's easy to do. And, you know, tearing down a building is easy to do, too. Get it just from the big machine and boom, it's down in a minute. But to reconstruct and build it up, this is what I'm getting from this. It takes time, 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 time. And they tell us that on reconstruction. And it took me a long time because, see, I can't do it perfectly. I don't care if it's about eating. I have to know that I'm powerless. But I have to really think about being powerless over everybody else. And boy, is it easy. It is easy to criticize them, especially my husband and son. But, you know, I've learned the standards of these steps. And by practicing and practicing and trusting and trusting is the only way that I can change, because I can't change myself. That's God's, my higher power's success. Believe you me. And I was married for 54 years. And in 6 years, it was taken away from me. He passed away. But let me tell you, I am so grateful to these steps that, yes, I did try to change through these steps and through the grace of my higher power. Because I was either childish or I was grandiose or superior. I mean, that's my personality. I either was depending on you or I was demanding from you. I mean, imagine, that's disease. But I don't do that today because I'm starting to emotionally mature and grow up. Because as a child, I always wanted you to do this for me and wanted to give me this. But today, I'm trying to become a better friend, mother, sponsor, and not be so demanding. And this is the way you have to do it because it's my standard. And that's the problem, my standards. But the steps I have found out are God's standards. And I love the if onlys. Oh, if only my husband would give me the attention that I think I need, et cetera. Yes, thank you so much. So there's a new measure of success now. Just keep doing what we're doing, one day at a time, and we will spiritually grow towards that standard. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Janice PM. Robin P., it's your turn, followed by Barbara E.
Hi, this is Robin P. in Los Angeles, and I apologize for the traffic sound. I'm walking outside, and I just really appreciate, I just love this meeting so much, and just love the recovery that I hear so powerfully. And, you know, I feel like, so people have heard my story about, you know, how I got the grace of God in action in my life with my ex-husband and I reuniting and the miracle of a mercy second chance. But the other thing that I've noticed that applies to these paragraphs is that we've also had to had the grace of going through the lessons that we failed at the first time and getting them right the second time, the willingness, the honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, how we recover in our relationship together, the same opportunities have come up for how do we deal with this time? How do we grow up through this time instead of blaming and shaming and guilting and demanding and all of those other negative behaviors of selfishness, self-seeking, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. You know, it's the mental obsession part that, combined with the physical allergy, the mental obsession can be a very unlovely thing to live with. And the miracle and grace for me is that I've gone through the same take twos, and I am passing with God's grace and love because of God's grace in action and God's love and mercy. I get to do things differently. And, you know, one of the themes of our relationship is finding a home to live in that's, you know, just, we live in Los Angeles area. It's really expensive here, and it's expensive in a lot of places. And we're looking for a single family home that works. And, you know, we've lived in apartments quite a bit, and I'm very electromagnetic field sensitive. I'm just EMF sensitive. So, and I get really bad headaches and asthma and really brain fog and just real intense symptoms. And so we moved to another apartment a couple of weeks ago, and it's just not working. There's too much wireless around me, and even though we're not wired, so, I mean, we're wired, but so I have to move again. And this time we get to do it when we've been moving and we keep trying to find the right place to live and with God's help. We get to do it with love, with love, patience, tolerance, and kindness. And that's the miracle, that we're doing it as a team and a partnership instead of angry and resentful and fearful. And thank you, God, that we get to grow up through this. And I'm so grateful for my husband's, my fiance now, willingness.
Time, please.
To do this with me. Thank you so much. And God bless everybody in your recoveries. With that, I pass.
And thank you, Robin P. Barbara E., it's your turn, followed by Liat TD.
Good morning, everyone. I hope I can be heard.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, wonderful. It is raining here in New Jersey, so I'm binging on meetings today, and I can never get enough of this. This is good stuff, because in my home meetings, the people are coming in really expecting free diet clubs. At least that's how I presumed it, that they were feeling, or free group therapy, just vomiting out our problems and having people say, we love you, keep coming back. But here on these meetings, I hear the truth, at least the truth for me. And I love that this big book is constantly giving us explanations and stories to help us to understand what's going, because I am a slow learner. But these pages are wonderful for me. Recovery, for me, is about persisting, doing the same thing over and over. The rewards did not come immediately. I created damage, a lot of damage. So my family has to learn how to trust me again. And I also have to focus on passing it on, how I can help others to learn from my experience. The greater my acceptance, the better I'm living. Wanting my family to make comments about how I've changed, wanting their accolades, their validations, is still me in my self-seeking, my ego. The change had to come from within me, slowly. If I know that I'm reacting differently, that's what's important. If they don't say anything, it's okay. I'd like them to notice the difference, but that's up to them. Helping others, sharing my experience, the journey I've taken, the journey I'm continuing to take, is what's all important to me. I have to trust that my higher power will lead me to become a kinder, gentler, more outward-loving person. I have to search fearlessly, and those character defects are like whack-a-mole. They can keep coming back over and over and over, but I have to keep the pipeline open so that
I can...
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for allowing me to share. I pass.
And thank you, Barbara E. And Liat TV, you'll be our last share this morning. Please go ahead. Liat TV, press star 1 to unmute.
Can you hear me?
We can now. Thank you.
Oh, good, good, good. I was trying differently. Good morning. Thank you so much. This is a wonderful meeting, and I love all of you. You know, I love that it's, you know, this is the family afterwards. This is after the alcoholic recovered, you know, and they call themselves recovered because they come to a place of sanity, you know, they recovered their health, you know, they didn't have the desire to drink anymore, and that's a miracle. And so for me, you know, 12 years in OA, my dream was that I didn't know anything about recover, but my dream was that I can stop binging, stop chasing after the food and the thoughts about the food and the body and how I look and I don't look. And if I could just, this was my problem. This was my main issue. I just wished so much that I'll be free from that. You know, and once I was given that over 18 years ago, that period of reconstruction began. And it is a long period. Can you imagine? If someone told me it will take you 18 years to fall in love with your husband, I will go back to the food. I didn't realize it takes so long to just get out of the hole, at least for me, because I am a really slow learner. I'm a stubborn person, you know, and, you know, so ideas, emotions, and attitude had to change. I had to go through the psychic change. And the thing is that it didn't for me happen like with the food. It was like, for me, the food was an overnight matter. With the family, that is a long period of reconstruction. I can see that so clearly today, being all those years clean with my food, sober. So, you know, and I was thinking, there is a great story. I work with children, young children, and there is a story called The Seven Blind Mice. And I thought that if I could just be thin or normal body size, then life would be perfect. I didn't realize how blind I was, you know. And these seven blind mice, they go up and down this elephant, and they feel his tail, and they think it's a rope. One of them, oh, it's a rope. They feel his tusk. They think it's a spear, you know. And they're not realizing they're on an elephant. The last one, takes them 7 days, long period of reconstruction. You know, it takes them to realize, oh, we're on an elephant. And that's what happened to me. It took me a long period of time to realize that how messed up I am, how sick I am. I came really, really sick, and I didn't even know it. The beauty of it is the grace of God. God gives me, along the way, awarenesses. And they're sufficient enough to keep me clean and to keep me content. So it's not a black and white process.
Time, please.
Every period, okay, I'll pass. But every time there was a little bit of awareness and a little bit, and that was sufficient enough to keep me clean and to also keep me content. And I'll pass. I love you all.
Thank you, Leah TD, and to everyone who shared, and to Team Tuesday. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Sherry KB please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past and give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep